If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
You've been listening to Verse 23 and Amy Helm from her new album, What the Flood Leaves Behind, out now wherever you buy and stream music. Many musicians who grow up in the shadow of their famous musician parents desperately try to shake their heritage in favor of setting their own path. Singer-songwriter Amy Helm isn't one of those people. Instead, she continues to pay homage to her father, the late Levon Helm, by continuing to pursue authentic musical experiences for herself and the audience. Her third album, What the Flood Leaves Behind, is proof positive that Levon's spirit pervades over an album full of material that is rich in lyrics, superior musicianship, and vocals that are undeniably outstanding. I caught up with Amy to unpack some of these sentiments as we explored her new album. I mentioned as the conversation began that it's said you have your whole life to make your first album, the rush is on to get your second one made, and by the time you hit the third, it's all about making a complete album for yourself in an attempt to figure out who you are as a musician or an artist.
Well, that's interesting. Is that like a comment that's, I've never heard that, but that seems to make a lot of sense.
I think so. And I think that What the Flood Leaves Behind certainly represents that in a great many ways, right?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I felt that way. This record felt different, and I've been, you know, been doing so many interviews about it, and kind of as I'm telling the story, getting more and more connected to what it was that was different about it. I think that I spent a few years like really working hard in the years leading up to this record. I was touring hard. I'm a single mom of two boys who are now 9 and 13, but you know, when they were littler, there's a lot more to manage about that. And it was challenging. There was a lot of contrast there. There was a lot of joy and triumph, but I had to learn how to balance a lot of things. And truthfully, I think that I grew into a new place in myself as a mom, just getting more patient, getting more skills together, you know, taking, I always watch their teachers. You know, you find the three or four incredible teachers that your kids have, and you watch how they handle a situation, and you pull that wisdom in and emulate it. And I really worked hard on that part of myself while touring. And I think all of that just put me into a place where it wasn't a different story I wanted to tell. I just felt more inside my own skin, I guess.
Did recording this album at home, so to speak, in the barn, really help that process along?
Yes. Yes, it really did. And I've been sharing this, it was really humbling to be back in the barn, because I didn't, to be completely forthcoming, I didn't want to go to the barn.
Oh.
Not that I'm jaded and not that I take it for granted, right? But I wanted to go to Mexico. I just had this, like, I wanted to be out in the desert, and I wanted the whole experience, and I wanted it to feel exotic, and I didn't have the money for it. I didn't have the means to make this thing happen. And so it just made logistical and financial sense. And we went to the barn, and this is a room that I've sang thousands of gigs in this room. And honestly, when we, the first day we walked in and set up and started making music in this room, I was so humbled by the frequency of this room. Is just its own thing. There's just, you can't explain it. It's one of those mysterious qualities of a very specific venue, a very specific sound in the room. It's warm. It's filled. It's like echoing with memory and music. And another part of that was that not only did I feel that in the process of making the record, but all the guys that were there with me making this album, who had never played the room or only played it once or twice, everybody was feeling the same kind of pulse. It had its own pulse to it.
Not to get, you know, too Shirley MacLaine on this, but do you think that
I went Shirley MacLaine last night on my interview.
Do you think dad's spirits in the room? I mean, his name is adorned on the barn, and yeah, we know the career and we know kind of the legacy at this point, and what it means to not only you, but to so many people, obviously, mm-hmm. You most importantly. Do you think that dad's spirits in the room kind of lifting you up every time you're in that room?
I most definitely feel that. And I'll say too, that, that another thing about that room is that I don't know if it's just specifically his spirit. I think that I've not met a musician who didn't walk into that room and start playing music and feel connected to their own history as well, which is an interesting consequence of being in a place that just has such a particular vibration to it and frequency to it. So when I was there, I think he was there. I felt him there. Dan Littleton's mom had just passed away. He came to play guitar on the last day, on the last session, and we cut verse 23, which opens the album, the song written by Mike Taylor. And I felt Dan's mom standing there with us too. I just think it is an open channel, you know.
It's so great that you have the opportunity to share in that basically whenever you want. I mean, that's really a unique and special situation that you have.
It is, and it's so cool to be able to share it with other musicians.
Right.
It's such a cool thing.
Yeah.
To like know that someone might go there and have a great experience playing. I mean, that's why my dad built the room. You know, it's like it was built by a drummer. Yeah. By a really cool drummer.
Yes, one of the
really
coolest.
Wanted, yeah. One of the coolest. And he was a cool guy. He was exactly who people think he was. He was like a union man, you know. He wanted musicians to go there and make a payday and sound as good as they could. So he and Garth Hudson, you know, a little backstory too, to after describing the room so deeply in this conversation, the two, you and me, you know, he and Garth Hudson designed the room so that it was acoustically had a certain resonance to it. So that's part of it.
Let's go back to current day speak. Just because, not that I don't, you know, I've had the opportunity, unfortunately I never met your dad, but I did meet Garth many years ago, and what an interesting cat that guy is. But let's talk about this record. Let's talk about Josh Kaufman, who you enlisted to produce this record. What a special talent and musician he is on his own, right?
He really is. He is. And also Josh is really, he just has a heart as big as his talent. He's just, he's a very bright light, and he's very funny, and he's very honest, and it makes it easy to get to the song, get to the point, you know, whether it's get to the point of how do I want this vocal? He's a really special artist.
I mean, he plays piano on this record. Aside from sort of directing the whole session and getting the most out of the musicians, here he is playing piano, guitar, and mandolin as well on this record. I mean, what a phenomenal talent. I mean, you're lucky.
He's a phenomenal talent. And he did something that was really, really cool and helpful, which is before we went into the barn to make the record, we spent maybe 3 or 4 days total, like over the course of a few months, down at his studio in Dumbo in Brooklyn. And we just demoed a lot of the songs, and I would play piano and then he would add a bass thing and I would play something. We kind of integrated all of that stuff. And then we actually ended up using, I think 3 or 4 of the songs were the bass tracks were those demos. Oh, wow. And then we had people layer onto that.
I was going to ask, you know, I'm one of these people that doesn't want to get too deep into the lyrics, because I think lyrics are very personal. And I think while they could tell one story to you, they could be interpreted differently by me or by others. And so I don't want to mess with lyrics. I think that, you know, the story will be told and people can find your definition of those lyrics elsewhere. But what I do find fascinating is that this is a coming of age record. Not that you are necessarily coming of age or that there's any rush to do that or anything like that. But this is in many ways sort of like a, you know, a coming of age record where you deal with a lot of these themes that you've been dealing with for a while. But finally, I think they're maybe set free in a very different way. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I felt that way. It is very, very accurate for me. I felt that way. And I don't know if I still know, if I still can articulate what that is, but I think about, you know, it's just the gift of getting older. I think there's a real gift in getting older. I just turned 50 and I tell my younger friends, like, we, you know, we live in a culture that is so fascinated with youth and the power of being young, but really there's like, I mean, gosh, if I had felt this good when I was 25, I think that there's just a gift in knowing yourself more and wanting to share a little of what you've learned, with the next generation. I mean, that's kind of, that's what it's all about. I love, and you know, actually, I would say too that when I talked about motherhood, I also have a lot of young friends. I have a lot of friends of different ages, and a lot of the people I roll with are younger. Some are really close friends, but 20 years younger, and I mentor a lot of younger people in the community. I love being in that role. And I think it comes naturally to me. And that has informed this too, because it makes me feel braver about storytelling.
Yeah.
When you have to tell a story and tell the truth to someone who's 18, who wants to know, it elicits a different courage, I think.
Absolutely. It's great. You know, I'm just a few years younger than you. And I feel like I'm actually coming into my own now as well. Like, it takes a while to learn who you are, and it takes life experience and, you know, family experience and whatever else to, you don't know when you're 20, you're pretty dumb when you're 25, actually. Not dumb, that's not fair, but you're not.
Right, but you keep thinking you're doing something wrong, right? This is what I tell to my younger friends. I said, if I could just turn back in time and tap myself on the shoulder and just say, it's okay.
Yeah.
You're cool. Everything's going to be all right, you know? So, yeah.
You talked a bit about demoing some songs before you went into the studio. Did you have a large collection of songs, or was it really just, you know, these songs that you focused on when you went into the studio?
We had 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm.
We cut 13 and decided to hold the three back. They just didn't, you know, that always happens when you finish recording, you hear it all and the body of work kind of reveals itself. So yeah, I think 13 or 14 songs we had.
What I find so amazing about you as a talent is that you're able to go from folkier stuff to more R&B stuff and really have fun with it. You know, I saw you last night, you referenced it at the album premiere online, dancing along and you know, different tempos require different songs, but you were right on it in terms of, you know, whether you were playing a more upbeat song like Sweet Mama or, you know, chilling out with some of the other songs, you were in the zone. And I can imagine that helps when you're recording these songs as well, that you have a sense of what these songs need to be in an emotive way. Right.
Oh, well, thank you. That's, I'm always working towards that. So that's a great compliment. Thank you. I could talk about this for 2 hours and get dirty.
It's important for us to understand from a musician's perspective, from a performer's perspective, you know, it's one thing to write these songs and perform them. It's another thing for your audience to feel like you're being genuine in spirit about these songs. And the only way they can see that is through your performance of these songs. They don't necessarily know what's going on in your head. They see you performing these songs. And so that connection with the audience through being genuine and authentic must mean a lot to you as a musician, right?
Oh yeah, it's everything. That'll be the thing that centers you back because if you get in your head, it's like anything. It's like any job and anything you love. If you start thinking about it, the second you start thinking about it, you're pulled right out. I mean, at least I am, you know, you're kind of kicked out of the moment. That's why I have I don't read interviews. I don't read bad ones. And I especially don't read the good ones. And I just don't do it so that I don't take any of that in and I'm not thinking about it. Feeling the audience is that's the center line. You know, I this story kind of applies to this. It's funny. It just popped in my head. So I'll share it with you. One of the last things that my dad said to me, he, this was when he was really getting sick, but he still was, these were the last two or three shows that he did with me. And I was doing this Tina Turner song. You're just a fool. You know you're in love, what you say, you got to face it. It's a great tune. And we did the song, and his favorite thing was to talk about the gig the next day. That was as if he could get the whole band to pop over and have a Coca-Cola with him. And, you know, he just loved that. And so we were talking, and he said, "Honey, you did really good with that song last night. And it really sounded good." And I said, "Yeah, you know, Dad, I felt kind of self-conscious. I felt like, I mean, I felt like it was kind of a lame song, and maybe I can't sing it so much like in the R&B way." And I was just in my head and doing this like singer thing, mm-hmm. right? And he just looked at me with the most gentle, sweet way. And I knew exactly how he meant it. And he said, "Honey, it's okay. It doesn't have anything to do with you.
Right.
It doesn't have to do with you." He said, "You know what it is about that song?" He said, "The band sounds great. You're just giving that joyful moment to the audience and to the band." And there was something about him framing that. And I thought, right, sometimes it's just about like, does it feel good? Is it a cool song? Does it have a vibe? Are people moving their shoulders? You know, and I always think about that. There was so much depth to that small moment of him saying that.
This pandemic has hit a lot of people pretty hard. And it's been a really hard year and a half for a lot of people. Some people have taken the time to recharge. Some people have taken the time to be with family. You mentioned that you're on the road constantly, so certainly being at home with the boys was probably refreshing.
And it was amazing.
And a blessing. But here we are now, and this thing is sort of done with, at least we hope. And you have a new record. What's the plan? Is the plan to get out there and tour as much as possible?
You know, I'm creeping into the touring.
Yeah.
Because it's very difficult right now. The whole industry is kind of, it's got a bottleneck thing happening right now. And a lot of people that were booked from last year. So I just want to, I'm kind of staying close to home, honestly, for the rest of the summer into the fall and doing gigs locally. And I'm traveling a little bit. I just went down south last week. And a couple things in the South this summer, but yeah, I'm gonna
ease
walk
into
in
it.
Slowly till it makes sense and till it makes financial sense. For There's sure. always that.
Yeah, for
That's
sure.
It. I think every musician I've spoken to, whether they're playing coffee houses or stadiums, it's like the same thing. It's like, the hustle of having to get out there and tour is a very specific thing. And I think a lot of people took this year to stop and go, let's make this make sense, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at with it too.
You probably also have the benefit of having a room where people can come see you, which is amazing. Where people do come and see you, where people have come and seen you or your dad for so long that it's natural for people to drive up to Woodstock or down to Woodstock, no matter where they're from to come.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, I can't, you know, I wish I could just play there every weekend, but I'm playing there a few times and then I get the you know, it's great to be able to go over there when I'm home and see other bands play. So
yeah. Our good friend Marco Benevento is always playing there, it seems, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just did a gig with Marco there a few weeks ago.
You keep amazing company. You don't just come from amazing stock. You know, between Josh and Marco, you keep amazing company too. You're a very fortunate woman in that way.
I never take that for granted. I think you're right. And I never take it for granted. The musicians and the singers that I have the chance to make music with every day, just, you know, that's how you get better.
Yeah.
You surround yourself by great artists or whatever craft you're in. You surround yourself by people that are committed to mastering their craft, and you know, get better with them.
What the Flood Leaves Behind is your third record. You now have a repertoire of original music that you'll be able to perform. Is the song, because you are a singer-songwriter, is the songwriting process an ongoing thing for you? Do you have your phone at the ready to record a melody or some jot down some lyrics? Is that, I know for a lot of people, they have to sit down and be inspired. Is that an ongoing process for you or something that you actually have to take time to do?
I think if I took more time to do it, it would have a different pattern. But for me, I don't, during the whole lockdown, I don't know why I just had no songs come to me. I just didn't
Yeah.
Because often for me, what comes in first are the melodies, and then I can find it from there. But recently, I'm starting to really want to write again, and I'm starting to have ideas and make voice recordings and sit down at the piano and start to find things that feel good. So I'm hoping this will be, you know, it seems very seasonal for me.
Yeah.
The writing process and yeah, I don't know. Sometimes there's a great book called The Artist's Way that I did. That's like a 12-week self-study in sort of, you know, tapping into your creativity. And that book often talks about how sometimes taking a month off of the thing you want to get better at and just like gardening for a month, or, you know, learning how to build a picnic table, whatever your thing is that you want to try is sometimes the very thing that we need to open something back up.
Well, I got to tell you, this is a beautiful record. Congratulations. Today is release day. And I know it's like giving birth, but it's different. It's like all of those life moments, but a little bit different, because, you know, it really is your heart and soul that you put into creating this a new piece of art. And I can't thank you enough for producing it and spending some time with us today to talk about it. Thanks, Amy. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You can learn more about Amy Helm, purchase her music, or check out tour dates at amyhelm.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another cutoff of What the Flood Leaves Behind. Here is Sweet Mama.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.